Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts, sports journalist David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves, chillin', talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan at SteelersDepot.com, a place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. I'm David Todd at Season 8, Episode 65. And Dave, I was silly enough the other day to, yesterday early, to mention that, you know, the Steelers might actually have a week, you know, with no drama, with nothing going on. Got a game against the Browns, which, you know, at the end of the day, it may have some meaning, but likely not meaningful. It's just, it could be kind of quiet time. We could talk about what's going on around the league. Not much going on. How's the weather in Vegas?
not much to talk about. Bah humbug. Christmas is over, evidently, according to my Twitter feed yesterday. Boy, you should really unmute some of them people.
I found them.
You found them then. Okay. Lord have mercy. What are we going to talk about on this Wednesday? Some guy named James Harrison ended up with another team. Oh, he was a free agent. He cleared waivers. I was not surprised that, like I said, I was not surprised that James Harrison cleared waivers. I expected maybe a team or two to maybe kick his tires or whatnot. The Patriots were one of them. And when you go back and you look at what's going on with the Patriots right now, especially with their defense and with the injuries that they've suffered this year, you can start seeing now why the worst fears of Steelers Nation came true. They brought James Harrison in for a visit. Now remember, they could have had him for a little over $70,000, which was 1 week remaining on his current contract, they can wait till he cleared waivers, bring him in, give him a physical, work him out, all like that, and then sign him for the minimum, which, you know, right around $50,000 or so. It wasn't a money issue on either side with this, because let's face it, any team that had interest in why is it us rednecks always say supposedly?
It's true.
It is true. Supposedly with a V in there. To hear some of the things out there, you know, more than one team had interest in James Harrison. Now, was it?
But nobody had enough interest to actually. I mean, look, there's a second year of a deal, which, so you have the rights to Harrison next year. You know, there is some dollars associated with that, but, you know, no, he got through waivers. So.
Right. And look, there was no cap liabilities with that, though. Basically it would have cost you about $20,000 to actually bring him in, give him a physical, you know, but the other team, if the Patriots wanted him bad enough the first time around, why didn't they claim him? You know, they, in other words, and they were going to be at the bottom of the waiver claim. So, I guess it would make sense, for them not.
Right, they were the last claim, so it doesn't make any sense to claim them.
Right. In other words, they get the free look. You know, they get the free physical, you know, so that makes sense. Now, as far as the other teams that, you know, one can speculate the Chiefs, one can say, you know, look, I are the Ravens really in play here with, you know, the pass rushers that they have right now? I know they've had a lot of injuries and all. Okay, regardless, they evidently didn't claim him. So the question goes back to, why didn't the Patriots claim him? We just answered that. It made no sense when you're the last team to put a waiver claim on somebody unless you don't think that you can sign them, you know, as a free agent.
Right. He's not going to answer your phone call.
Right, and one would think that Bill Belichick had already picked up the phone and talked to James Harrison.
Talk to his agent, I should say.
And all. So, all right. Here we are. Hello, James. This is Bill Belichick. We know you said all those nasty things about us in Men's Journal back in 2012, and a few other things since then, and called us cheaters, and you want to deflate Tom Brady's balls. We'd like to bring you in, and we need some pass rush help over here, and we think we can help you win a Super Bowl, and I imagine James said, okay, there he is. He signed. Now what? Now Steelers Nation went crazy.
Yeah. I mean, look, I had, it went from people in the media, talking about him when he was released. One guy said, who I think does a really good job. And it's just, he said that, it's a really strange time to release a guy who's such an important locker room figure and, stability and everything else. Let's first debunk that whole idea. First of all, James Harrison is not a prominent locker room figure. Now, guys went and worked out with him in the offseason. Maybe that's the most value that he added, the work ethic and value that he provided, some direction to the young guys in the offseason. James Harrison's in a corner of the locker room with his group of guys, doesn't speak to the media except on Fridays. He publicly, I don't know what word you want to use, but commented on his lack of playing time in a situation when, on the week when Ryan Shazier got hurt. He had an exclusive interview with Dale Lawley in that respect. And he has every – look, he's been around long enough that I think guys are allowed to say what they want to say. But let's not hold up the idea that, A, the Steelers coaching staff isn't aware that we on the outside have more sense of what James Harrison's locker room role is and presence is than anybody on the inside. And the reality is James Harrison – this team can function just fine without James Harrison, obviously did on Sunday in a game on the road where they were, a double-digit favorite, went and took care of business just fine. They've got, 50 sacks on the season, second in the NFL, close to a Steeler single-season high. So they've not had issues in terms of – I shouldn't say they've not had issues. That's not the right way to put it. They've been successful at rushing the passer. We can debate, whether – James can set the edge. We saw him play his 40 snaps. We saw him have some success against Eric Fisher in Kansas City. And look, Dave and I have questioned, how they used him in that role. But they've obviously made that decision that they weren't going to, he wasn't going to be part of the rotation. And he isn't. And, 30 to 31 teams passed on him in the waiver wire for basically very little cost. And apparently a bunch of playoff teams had some interest and reached out to his agent, and he made a decision to go to New England. Okay, so we know all the background facts. The idea that James Harrison owes the Steelers anything when they fired him, basically it's just a different term, right? In the NFL they don't use that term, but James Harrison got fired by the Steelers on Saturday, and another team offered him a job. It's beyond comprehension to me that anybody thinks James Harrison owes the Steelers anything. He didn't owe the Steelers anything. They fired him. If somebody else wants to, bring him in and he has an opportunity to go make money and have a job and for whatever reasons he wants, I'm speaking for Dave as well on this. I know he's fine with it. Would you like to see him in a Patriots uniform and have success against the Steelers? No. Do I think Steelers fans need to root for James Harrison? Of course not. But I don't begrudge him doing what you would expect any normal human being to do.
Yeah, and look, people saying he's dead. He's dead to me now. They're throwing his jerseys away. First of all, if you're out there and you got a jersey and you want to get rid of it, donate it to somebody or put it up on the eBay machine or something like that. Don't just throw it out.
When he goes into the Steelers Ring of Honor, someday down the road, you're going to be looking for your 92 jersey.
Yeah, but these people will come back around at some point, I have a feeling. People say, oh, he's got enough money. He doesn't need the money. This is all spite. Whatever you want to call it. The guy put his body through hell, right? I mean, We see it almost every day on his Instagram account. You know, in there just up before anybody, first thing in there, and we see how much money he spends on his body, the acupuncture and all like that. People think it's, you know, it's cheap to for athletes to maintain themselves, the way some of them do. We already know he spends, what, $200,000 to $300,000 or so, he says, a year to keep his body maintained. I believe that. He didn't just do this just to all of a sudden find himself on the street week 16 of the season, right? I mean, if he's able to find employment somewhere else, God help him. And you know the guy wants to win at least one more Super Bowl. Now will there be some meaning of accomplishment getting signed by a team week 17 of the season and then going on and helping them win a Super Bowl? Well, I guess it depends on what you do during the playoffs, you know. But I don't fault him one bit because, as you said, he was fired by the Steelers. This wasn't like he spurned them during free agency or something like that. So, get over it. People seem to forget this guy was with the Bengals for one season. Everybody seemed to get over that. And now here we are because it's the Patriots. Everybody's losing their freaking mind. Good for him. I didn't think it would happen, but good for him.
Yeah, I mean, you know, look, there is people can point to whatever they want to point to. We've seen the Patriots take shots with guys. Some work out, some don't. Malcolm Floyd last year was one. I mean, look, the list is long. Just this year, Martellus Bennett, we know what happened with him in Green Bay. There was some acrimony as he left, and some Packers, the Packers organization wasn't necessarily very happy with him, so he goes there. We see Kenny Britt. He gets cut with the Browns and had some off-the-field issues, so he goes. James Harrison, you know, clearly, look, he said it. He wasn't all that happy. He flat-out said he would not have signed with the Steelers if he knew it was going to go this way. So it wasn't perfect the way it ended. Mike Tomlin did not, when asked directly, did not want to elaborate, and I didn't. That doesn't surprise any of us. Mike generally keeps all those conversations between, you know, the people involved. So he didn't say anything more than it's a football decision, and we kept the people we felt gave us the best chance to win. And that's, you know, I realize not everybody loves Mike Tomlin, but Mike Tomlin's there, and this team's 12-3, and they got 12-3 by using the guys that they've used with the coaching staff that they have. And I think it's hard to question the judgment of the decision that they went with the guys they went because it was in the best position. Now, I don't know. Did the Steelers have some interest in bringing Harrison back yesterday? That's possible. Nobody's going to it's in nobody's best interest to not bring that forward now that he's signed with the Patriots. Maybe they had the conversation. Maybe they didn't. But obviously Harrison, if you're James Harrison and you got a call yesterday and it was, you know, the Steelers said, we'd like to bring you back, and you know basically you're not going to play, or the Patriots call and say, look, you know, we've got some issues. We think you can help us out. You know, if you want to play football, if your goal is to play football, and you had the option on Tuesday, Dave, to go to New England or to come back, or Tuesday, to go to New England or to come back to Pittsburgh, if your option was to play football, you probably got a better chance of playing football in New England.
Let me ask you this. Is there a possibility that James Harrison became a bit of a distraction malcontent? I don't want to use cancer, but I mean, is there a chance that he became an issue in the locker room?
I think there's a the view was that James Harrison's no longer, providing, you know, he's not a guy who anybody's looking to for leadership at this point now. Leadership comes Yeah, I think people in the locker room know where it comes from. On the defensive side of the ball, it comes from Cam Hayward. He is the unquestioned defensive leader, and Ryan Shazier had taken a bigger and bigger role in that. And, you know, whether people like it or not, Mike Mitchell has a role in some of that. So, you know, that's where your leadership comes from on the defensive side. You know where it is on the offensive side. It starts with Ben, but the guys on the offensive line, Pouncey and DeCastro in particular, are your guys. So, you know, James Harrison, the nature of the beast is in any sport, it's very difficult. And if you've ever played a sport at any level, it's very difficult to be a leader or somebody that's looked up to if you're not playing. Now, if you're in the end of your career like James, you get some of that. But now, you know, as the season goes on, that the whole season's been played without him and they've been successful without him. So, yeah, I think your point is fair that he's, you know, the idea that James Harrison is the locker room leader, that's just not the case anymore. Certainly may have been the case. It's not the case now.
We've seen him in some videos even before he went off claiming that, you know, had he had known things had played.
Hey, you pointed it out, and you were the first. And I didn't jump on the bandwagon with you. You were out there alone saying, you know, he's showing these videos, and the Steelers are saying he's hurt. And that, you know, the two don't go together.
Right, and he was pretty much throwing it in their face that I'm not hurt in the videos, you know?
Yeah, that's my point. And you were saying that, and you said just that.
Right. He was not happy. Now, it doesn't take a rocket surgeon to figure that one out. But should he have said... Now, obviously, asking a rhetorical question about should James Harrison have done anything is a wrong start. But should he have said what he had said a couple of weeks ago about, you know, if I had known, I wouldn't have re-signed. I mean, to me, that's already asking.
Yeah, you raised some eyebrows with a comment like that for sure.
I mean, you're pretty much saying at that point, if you don't need me, just cut me, you know. At that point, you asked me yesterday, was I a bit surprised to see his name come across the waiver wire? Yeah, I mean, you know, he made it this far. I kind of figured he'd probably make it the rest of the way. But on the flip side, you know, I didn't swallow my gum. In shock. I bet he was very upset. Now, is he thinking some level of spite here? That seems to be the big buzzword going around. Oh, he's just spiteful now. Well, maybe to some degree. Look, do you think he got joy in tweeting out that picture of him and Tom Brady? Yes, Davey. What an ultimate. If this was wrestling, David, boy, this would be a great plot right now. You know, classic, what they call them, heel turns or whatnot. But once again, you know, the Steelers, you know, ended business with him, so he was free to do whatever he wants. Now let's go to the. Do you have any more to add on the actual him getting cut?
Well, I do. I do. I am a bit amused at the picture of he and Brady, because clearly there's a little knife twist in putting that out there.
Sure,
I mean, he
sure.
knows exactly the reaction that's going to get. Smile on his face with the king of the evil empire. If he had had Belichick on the other side, the only thing could have made it, you know, more dramatic. I mean, that he knew, and the tagline's perfect, because the tagline is completely innocuous. Nothing Steelers, nothing Patriots. Just like, oh, I got an older teammate. Like, oh, hey, how's it going? So that was, you know, I have to tell you, I thought that was pretty well played, to be honest.
The only thing that could have made that worse was Robert Kraft kissing him on the lips. I think that's the only can you imagine if that would have happened? Twitter, the Twitter machine would have melted yesterday. It almost melted yesterday when he put up that picture of Tom Brady. And holy moly, there'd be people, not only would there be people jumping off the bridge, there'd be people jumping off the bridge with a burning Harrison. jersey.
If the two of them had been in director chairs with Belichick and Kraft behind them, hands on their shoulders, that would have been it.
Oh, Lord.
Holding hands.
Yeah. Okay. Let's get past the actual that happening. Now the next narrative. Oh, Lord. Belichick didn't get Harrison because he can rush the passer. He just wants the Steelers playbook and checks and signals and all like that. Now, he is definitely one up Tomlin here.
Man, I don't know if people think that that's how the – first of all, guys change teams all the time over the course of seasons, in season, whatever. Teams watch film of other teams all the time. Harrison certainly sees the Steelers' offense. There's no doubt about it. But the Patriots, the next time they play the Steelers will be, what, to time number four in 14 months? Pretty sure Bill Belichick and Matt Patricia and the rest of the Patriots coaching staff have a sense of what's going on. These guys didn't get where they are and get the reputation of being the smartest guys in the room without being the smartest guys in the room. Is there some one thing that James Harrison might be able to tell them that might be useful? Sure. There might be something about Ali Villanueva's technique that he can pass on when he's, you know, to who's ever coming at Ali Villanueva when they play again. Or that, you know, Foster likes to set like this on a certain, you know, play call. Yeah, there might be a nugget in there. But the idea that it's not going to be any better than the Patriots being ready for the fake spike, which they were ready for because they practice all the time and they get ready for every contingency and they're just well prepared. So, you know, James Harrison might give them a piece of information, but the idea that that he's going to turn over the X-Files is a bit of a stretch.
Yeah, and yesterday afternoon, a couple hours after the hysteria started, former Steelers offensive lineman Trey Essex posted on Twitter. He posted, "That info swap thing is drastically overblown. Players switch from team to team all the time, and there's nothing the Pats would learn new that they couldn't get from a season's worth of film." Okay, after he posted that, David, I reached out to him via direct message and all, and asked if I could ask him a couple of questions. And first, I said, look, how will the Steelers ultimately handle their calls here, signals and all moving forward? Should the two teams ultimately play in the AFC Championship game this year? And he says they switch signals from week to week anyway. James won't even know which signal is which. They won't be the same as they were the last time they played New England. So I asked him, I went on to ask him, I said, so fans and the media are blowing this all out of proportion, right? And he goes, even if he meaning Harrison, could, and then he puts in parentheses, he couldn't, New England players would have enough to worry about within their own game plan. So either they would have to memorize every signal we had every week on top of what they are doing, or James would have to give them live translation during the 45 seconds they have to get the play calls in between plays. It's silly.
I'm with you 100%. If it's just verbiage, they can change verbiage. They change things along the way all the time. Reaction time. Again, I'm not to open Pandora's box here on Spygate, but you know, people, you know, I kind of laugh at some of the Spygate stuff in terms of, okay, so they're filming the hand signals on the sideline. This is what people get worried about. Look, guys are always trying to get one up on information on anybody else by watching film, by doing whatever they can do to learn stuff. So, sure, will they talk to James Harrison? Of course. Like I said, will there be a nugget that you can say Ali Villanueva's left foot points, you know, a quarter of an inch further this way when Ben wants to run the ball to the right? If that's something that Harrison has, so be it. He'll pass it along. It's not going to be the reason the Patriots win or lose a game against the Steelers.
He is going to pass along. And look, even what did Mike Tomlin say after Joe Hayden was brought in? Yeah, we're going to debrief him, blah, 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 you know, in so many words. But in essence, how much information do you actually get? Boy, if the Steelers got any information out of Joe Hayden before the week one game, they used it wrong. maybe that's the difference here, right?
right.
Maybe it's the old chess and checkers thing after all. but look, I'm with you. They're going to get, you know, a piece or two or four of information out of James Harrison. Is it going to be enough to change a course of a game? No, I don't think so. If the Steelers get beaten by the Patriots in the AFC Championship game, I don't think we're going to be talking about, well, if James Harrison wouldn't have signed with them and gave them all that information, I don't think that's going to be the narrative here. Now, let's move on to the next part of the James Harrison saga. Will he help the Patriots, and more specifically, will he help the Patriots against the Steelers?
First of all, they got to play each other. So, okay, now, let's say that's a 50% likelihood from where we sit right now. They got to get there. Look, the Patriots try to put guys in a position where they can succeed. And what will be interesting is James Harrison's going to get to play this week against the Jets. I mean, he'll be on the field. And my view on this all along, and it was kind of my view the way it was going to be with the Steelers, and it didn't work out that way, is that you want James Harrison to give you 10 or 12 snaps a game. And I think both Dave and I feel like James Harrison can be a productive player in this league at 10 or 12 snaps a game used in just the right situation. That's what Bill Belichick's really good at, is putting guys in situations where they can be really successful and have very well-defined roles. And you can go back the entirety of Bill Belichick's coaching career, and starting with guy ex-Steeler Mike Vrabel is a great example of a guy. Put him in a system where he's asked to do things he does well, and he can excel and become a really good player in the league. For a guy who's not the most athletic or talented guy at the NFL level, you just keep looking at him. Look at the three running backs they've been using this year, and how he uses them and does different things. And when he gets guys like, identifies Wes Welker or Amendola or Edelman to be those guys. So I expect him to find a role for James Harrison where, he can set the edge in the run game a little bit and rush the passer and play 10 to 12 snaps.
Well, for starters, we should be able to get to see James Harrison go against who this weekend?
I don't know who's playing. Kelvin Beachum, I guess, left.
Yeah, Kelvin Beachum. So those are two guys that should know a little bit about each other, right? So that'll be fun to watch. Yeah, is James Harrison a 60-snap-a-game player?
Oh, yeah. I don't think James Harrison would tell you he's a 60-snap-a-game player. No, I really do think the number's 10.
I think he thinks he might be able to be a 60 snap a game player, but I don't think he is you're not going to drop him, right? I mean, you're not going to ask him to do anything than probably get after the quarterback and stop the run, I would think, if you're Bill Belichick. Can he get after the passer? Well, I mean, we saw what he did against the Chiefs earlier in the season, so the answer to the question is yes, he can obviously get after the passer. Is it a matchup thing? Did Belichick bring Harrison in maybe more with the notion that there's a good chance that he, because of the teams he's likely to face in the playoffs? I mean, he could face Baltimore, right? Potentially Baltimore, but
most likely Kansas City, and that's the one team James Harrison played against,
right? So and has had some most recent success with Fisher there. Now, And then obviously, you know, the Steelers on top of it. Now, is this, can we accuse Bill Belichick of looking ahead? you know, but look, I think James Harrison can be used the way the Steelers were occasionally using him, and that's occasionally getting after the quarterback.
You've got to remember, the Bills took a guy off Buffalo's practice squad, Eric Lee, who was a nobody, and you know he played every down against the Steelers, I think. I mean, and when he played the Bills the week before, you know, he's in there. They took a guy and played him the whole time because they are shorthanded at this position. So, you know, it's not if and there's not a good analogy, so I'll forget it. But they took the best player they could that was available to try and help them in a position where they have need. That's kind of how I look at this. I don't look at this. So yeah, it's a happy coincidence for them, I guess, that it's James Harrison and it's the Steelers. But if this had been an equivalent player who was let go by the Houston Texans, I think I really honestly believe that the Patriots would be bringing that player in too.
Well, they're just not bringing him in, you know, out of spite. They're bringing him. Bill Belichick is bringing him in because he thinks he can help the team. So
right, that's it.
And yeah, we'll see over the course of the next couple of weeks if indeed that's true. I do think though that James Harrison, you know, I think there's potential that he was a bit of a malcontent, you know, with the Steelers, you know, dating back to, you know, probably the last couple, three games or so. I mean, obviously not happy that he wasn't playing. And, you know, why, you know, I guess the only thing I would have to add right now at this point is why didn't they cut him sooner? You know, just going to carry him and play games the way they did on the injury report and you know, making him inactive and all like that.
Or make him active and tell him that he's not going to play. I mean, that's really – I mean, I would like to know how that conversation went that game. I think it was in Indy. We talked about it, where the defense is on the field and he's sitting on the sideline without his helmet.
Detroit,
right. I knew it was a dome stadium. I mean, it's just to me, I don't even understand it. Now, I mean, the only thing you think is that he is not healthy, but they made him active because, you know, they had a spot. But, you know, that doesn't really kind of jive with everything as well. So, you know, I don't know. It's just there were some odd things that happened over the course of the year. And when the kiss and tell all comes out, you know, maybe we'll find out the answers to the 2016-2017 season.
Yeah, and look, I mean, we got to play now. Now the players are going to talk about this. I'm guessing open locker room today, right? And then, you know, and some, you know, the way some of these players are responding, you know, on social media. It gives the effect that it's a little bit more than just being recruited by the evil empire, you know. I do think there's more there than what we know right now, and I think it's going to come out.
Okay. All right. I think we have certainly given a lot of conversation to James Harrison this season. The guy who played 40 snaps has got a lot more than 40 snaps worth of conversation. And that'll make just an added subplot to the game with the Jets this weekend. And certainly if these two teams meet again, what's interesting is that will be I'm sure that will be the dominant story. You know, more than everything that happened in the game they played a few weeks back, that will be the dominant storyline. And well, we'll see what happens from there. But you know, okay, football to go from here to there. Dave, Ben, and Mike, both spoke yesterday after we did the podcast. There was not a lot from Ben. I his answer was, I think he was shocked or surprised. Let me tell you how much time Ben thought about what was going to happen with that roster move on Saturday. None. You know, he knew Marcus Gilbert was going to be back, and I'm sure he didn't go through the 53 and say, you know, which guy's going to be let go? How many snaps has James played the last 4 weeks? So when somebody tells him James Harrison just got released, I'm sure I wouldn't be surprised if his reaction was anything other than I was shocked. That's exactly what I would expect his reaction to be. So And anything else from Penn, Dave, that caught your attention?
No, there were little bits of this and that, but nothing made me, you know, normally when Ben talks, I try to get a post up and written before Tomlin talks within that period of 45 minutes there, but I wasn't in a hurry to do any of that because I, you know, it was really kind of, you know, I was hoping they would ask him about relationship with Haley and all like that, but they don't, you know, those guys that interview him on a show were, you know, won't do anything like that.
One of them's too busy.
I understand. This is children are listening, David. I get it. Those guys look, and they won't write or say anything bad about Ben and blah blah blah. I get that. As far as Tomlin in his presser went, you know, he opened up by saying, look, we're going to play to win. You know, we're going to play to beat Cleveland. He did leave the door open somewhat to not playing his starters, but still playing to win. So
I think this is interesting, actually. I do think this. So let's first of all, it's like, look, whatever Mike does, the line in any head coach is going to be the same here. They're always playing to win the game. I don't care if you have your seventh team guys out there and it's a college football game. You want your seventh team guys to do the best they can do. So it's a given they're playing to win the game. Now, the answer of are they playing to win the game is completely told by who they put on the field. So if you don't start your starters, you're not playing to win the game. It doesn't mean you're not going to say the right things about your backups or whatever. So let's just forget all the BS and just look at this realistically. So what's Mike going to do in this game? I'll bet all of Dave's money again that the Steelers play their starters the majority of this game. I do not think there is any chance, and I don't think Mike had sat down and gone through all the scenarios with his coaching staff. I don't think there's any chance the Steelers approach this game to rest anybody with the fact that home field advantage is still on the line. And it is. The reality is it is. We've seen games in the past. The Jets have a history of playing New England tough. Of course, the Patriots are going to be a big favorite, and they're more than likely to win. But good gracious, were the Steelers to go in this game with Stephen Ridley and Landry Jones and you know Justin Hunter being you know your feature guys, and the Jets get a win, there'll be no end to it. And who cares what the fan base says? There'll be no end to it in Mike Tomlin's mind. So I would if I were you as a fan, I would expect the Steelers to have everybody out there and going. And even if the Patriots game 17-0 Patriots at halftime, I wouldn't expect a change in the third quarter. So I think it'd be a full go.
I don't just because look, not a one of us believes the Jets are going to upset upset the Patriots.
I'll tell you, if they had McCown, I would give it some credence. It's just they're not going to do it with Bryce Petty.
Right, but I mean, stranger things have happened, right? I mean, what if the Patriots are obviously going to start Tom Brady, right?
Yes.
I mean, they're playing to win that game. At least get out to where
they're going to play. Tom Brady's going to play the whole game, guaranteed.
Well, maybe not the whole game, but
38-0, maybe not the fourth quarter. But he's playing. I mean, Tom Brady plays the whole game. He didn't come out ever. Garoppolo never took a snap, you know, as a backup.
I mean, this is the NFL. I mean, this isn't, you know, yeah, it's a mismatch, but this isn't Appalachian State, you know, that we're talking about here. This is the NFL. What happens if Tom Brady takes a hit and goes out, you know, with a concussion or whatnot, you know, in the first quarter? You know, changes the whole complexity of the game here. So it's the old anything can happen thing, and you're playing at the same time that they are. I don't see how you can sit Ben Roethlisberger and Le'Veon Bell and say, okay, we're going to go into this to win, but we'll take our lumps if for some reason the Browns beat us and the Jets beat the Patriots. You got to go in expecting that the best outcome can happen. Now, if it gets it, you look up at the scoreboard after halftime and it's Patriots 31-3. Well, maybe you think about doing some changes there and getting some guys off the field. But I'm with you. I'll be shocked if Ben Roethlisberger and Le'Veon Bell don't start at least start this game and play the first half.
Yeah. Okay. So
here's the good news. Antonio Brown. You don't have to worry about Antonio Brown being out there this week.
Yes, he is not playing. Shocker. you know, we like I said yesterday, we've gotten some different information over the course of the weekend and up till is it a contusion? The fact is that they're not calling it a muscle tear is much better. And we've seen some video of Antonio Brown trying to get himself back. And here's my view is it's when the Steelers play their first playoff game, Antonio Brown will be somewhere closer to 100%. I doubt his calf's going to be 100%, but it'll be somewhere closer. And if the Steelers get to the Super Bowl and he doesn't injure himself any further, that would certainly be enough time that you would think he's back to 100%. So, you know, there's your timeline.
Right.
How about the fact that the Steelers have only gotten a bye three times? You know, this will be the fourth time under Mike Tomlin that they've won at least 12 games. They've only gotten a first-round bye three times, I think, is the number. That's a little surprising. I think they've only had a first-round bye three times. Is that right, under Mike? They've only had a bye three times in the first round?
What was it? 2010 was the last time, right? And they went to the Super Bowl that year.
And 2008, I think, as well.
And maybe 2008. I'll have to pull that up here. Let's see. Yeah, they had a bye in 2008.
Super Bowl, and I think, yeah. So this is only the third time they made it. It's a little surprising, but it is. It is what it is.
Right. And, okay. Mike, say anything else that caught you. I mean, I don't know what other way to beat the starter horse anymore. I mean, we both think he's going to play. Okay, what was the process for deciding Joe Hayden when deciding he would be traveling with a receiver like DeAndre Hopkins? He says it's really a lot of things. The matchup of the other guys, largely how we choose to play that particular day, zone, man, one high, two high safeties. It's a lot of variables in the equation. Yeah, that might be a little smoke screen there. It came down and they didn't want DeAndre Hopkins to beat him, so they put Joe Hayden on him.
Right.
He was asked about what is it about AB if he's gone for a month. By the time he suits up for the first playoff game, then you don't have to worry about rust. And Thomas says, I didn't say that, so we'll see. He hadn't missed a lot of time over the course of his career here anyway, so we don't have a lot to draw from in that regard. I mean, that's the right answer there because, I mean, he's never missed a large period of time because of an injury. And the one time, that he did miss because of the concussion in the divisional round of playoffs, we didn't see him until the next next season there. So, yeah, this is all kind of new territory when it comes to Antonio Brown. He was also asked about the run game issues, and you and I talked a little bit about that on the last podcast, being kind of disappointed there. He says some of it was just desire to minimize 10 and 10 being DeAndre Hopkins, so I don't want to make more or a deal out of it than it was. I was completely comfortable once we got a multi-score lead to allow them to run if they so choose. We couldn't allow 10 to do what we've seen him do, not only this year but over the course of his career. So really, that was our focus as we went into the football game to work hard to minimize his impact on it, and we realized it could have been some collateral in terms of the run game. Yeah, I kind of get that, but even still,
that's a good cover. That's a good cover.
Yeah, you got to do a little bit better job there. Did you see the gift that I put up last night? The all 22 of that long Alfred Blue run.
Yeah, I've seen that, and obviously the linemen get down on Sean Spence on that play. Everybody else on the right side of the Steelers formation gets cut off by the fullback coming through there. I mean, it's a big hole.
Right, and my point being that Mike Mitchell's coming downhill from a cover one situation to fill that alley, and he's expecting Joe Hayden to get that thing turned back into him somehow or another. If Mike Mitchell starts taking the angle to the outside of Joe Hayden, the back just cuts it back inside, and you get the same result. Maybe he gets tackled a little bit sooner because, Artie Burns, say what you will about Artie Burns. He's got some wheels, doesn't he? He comes all the way from the other side of that field, and he got a motor on him. But long and short of it is Hayden did not keep that run from going outside, and Mike Mitchell was trying to fill the alley, and Blue got outside. Just in general, you go through the All-22 tape, some of those runs, they just got to do a better job on that. There are going to be teams in the playoffs that are going to try to run the football on you, and the Baltimore Ravens, should the Steelers somehow end up facing them, are going to be one of those teams that I think you got to be scared about them in their running game.
Yes, I agree.
Alex Collins is, we've said it a couple times now this year. Alex Collins is going to be around a while, and the Steelers have not done an overly great job against him. So we need to tighten up that run defense. Look, they're going to get a decent test, I think, against the Browns this week. A guy like Duke and a guy like Crowell. So we'll definitely expect to see that tighten up a little bit there. Mike Tomlin was also asked about what did he see out of Stephen Ridley. He says it was just good to be in the stadium with him and see his game day demeanor. He's a pleasant guy. He's a put-his-hand-in-the-pile type of guy. We'll continue to work with him in terms of finding detail and etching out a role for him and get him in top-flight football condition. All those things are on the table with him, but not displeased with what he has done so far and his mentality about the challenges in front of him. So pretty standard question and answer right there. I don't think anything else stuck out as far as that interview, David.
Yeah, I wish I was in the room to ask some of the questions on that one. I think there was some stuff to talk about more in depth, but okay. It was another short press conference, kind of ended within 15 minutes. So, the Browns conversation is the Browns conversation. In fact, hopefully we're going to have Scott Petrak, who joined us before week one, join us on Friday. Scott wasn't able to get back to us today. So we'll do it. I think it's worth talking about the Browns a little bit. I'm interested to hear it looks like Hugh's going to be back in the building again next year. But since the Steelers have played the Browns, since we've talked about them, Sashi Brown was let go. They bring in Dorsey as their new general manager. They're going to have the first pick, and they're also going to have the fifth or sixth pick because they have the Texans pick. So Sashi at least left the cupboard not bare with two first-round picks and three second-round picks. And, who's going to be in charge of that? That's Dorsey's skill set. That's why he was brought in, is to get them football players. And hopefully we'll get some sense of, Kaiser and Myles Garrett and Jabril Peppers and some of the guys that have played this year. So that'll be on tap for Friday. Dave, around the league, unless there's something else you want to hit on from the conversation.
Well, let me ask you this. Where are you at with the Browns right now, organization-wise? And what would you do right now if you were John Dorsey? What is your plan during the offseason, and what is your main focus on in the first, say, couple rounds of the draft?
Well, I obviously would spend as many people as I felt necessary to make it a decision to have a full understanding of Darnold, Rosen, Allen, and Mayfield, and if you want to put Lamar Jackson in there. So you're going to have the first pick. So you're going to get, I think the consensus right now and going into this year is, you're going to have the best quarterback coming out since Andrew Luck. Now, Darnold, maybe didn't help himself as much in the season. Rosen didn't play in the bowl game with a concussion last night. I mean, there are questions about these guys, but in terms of, two guys who can make all the throws, this is big time stuff. I mean, these guys are going to they project better than Winston and Mariota and then better than Goff and Wentz at this point in time where they are in the draft board. So you're going to take one of those guys at one. And then the question is, you know, if the kid from Penn State's on the board, do you want to take a running back when you have a couple, you know, okay backs? Do you want to, you know, augment, you know, obviously they need help at wide receiver. You would, you know, I could see them taking a couple wide receivers in their first five or six picks, you know, because you can't bet on Josh Gordon if he's going to be back. Coleman's been nothing. They don't have, you know, the wide receiver's been a disaster for him. So you've got your tight end and Njoku. You know, they signed a lot of offensive linemen, so maybe you find a wide receiver in free agency. But I don't think the Browns, I think you could see the Browns, if you know, like the 49ers. You saw the 49ers, they just won four games in a row. You could see the Browns, if they get a quarterback who can play, win five games next year, and then be at least a 500 team 2 years from now. I would want to be the head coach of the Browns right now with the guys they got in this year's draft and five first two round picks, because you know you're going to get your quarterback for the first time.
Would you entertain going after Kirk Cousins?
I would entertain it if I didn't think I have a franchise guy, because, you know, remember, you're going to pay these guys a million whatever for the first year, you know, up to as it scales higher. You're going to pay them less in the 4 years of their first 4 years of their rookie deal than you would pay Cousins in 1 year. So I don't think I would be in that market having the first pick in the draft. If I had the fourth pick in the draft, I might have a different view. But with the first pick and given a choice to those guys, I don't think I'd entertain it.
Well, keep in mind now, this isn't baseball. I mean, they got a ton of cap room and they got a cash floor that they got to meet, you know.
So, go find me the best wide receiver and the best defensive lineman or, you know, outside linebacker and add it to Myles Garrett. Plenty of places to spend it.
Right, but as we all know, if you don't have quarterback in this league.
But they're going to have a chance now to pick the quarterback. I mean, everybody agrees that, you know, these are potentially elite quarterbacks. I mean, they obviously made a decision not to draft Wentz or Goff. They didn't have the choice last year, so.
All right. Definitely be interesting to see which way they go. And you know, Dorsey has a little bit of a decent track record, I think, you know, time in Kansas City and all like that. So definitely be interesting to watch. Okay.
You would take a quarterback with one, right? You're going to take one of those guys, right? I mean, that's no brainer, right?
Yeah, well, you know me, I'm, you know, I think you should take two every year until you get one.
They could draft Darnold at one and Allen at five. I mean, they could do that.
Yeah.
I mean, people would go crazy.
Right. They obviously won't, but, I think even so, I think you can entertain. Here's the thing. I don't bring in a rookie quarterback and let him start right away. I want somebody that I think can groom him a year at least.
Well, the big mistake really might have been letting Josh McCown because, you know, with Kaiser, it might have been the big mistake is letting him walk and not having anybody else to man the ship.
Right. And you know, either that or well, yeah. Maybe they should have went harder at a guy like McCarron during the offseason, you know, to see if they could have got him away for whatever, you know. I Mike Brown probably was driving a hard bargain before the season when it came to McCarron. But now, you know, now they're going to lose McCarron for nothing, right? The Bengals. So that's kind of why I thought that might be going last offseason, and why Mike Brown would have been willing to part with him for a decent deal, almost like with the Patriots and Jimmy Garoppolo. You know, now what are you going to get outside of, you know, compensatory you know, payback, I guess, when McCarron signed? Well, let me ask you this. Okay,
they got to make a ruling still, right? They got to rule him a free agent.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I mean, we don't know that, but do you go after? If you're the Browns, do you go after him if he's a free agent?
Well, it's going to be interesting to see what his market value is. Is he like we've talked about this over the past couple of years? When Chase Daniel went to Philadelphia, he signed a contract that nobody had really signed, like the $7 million deal, a year, $7 million. Nobody signs deals between, you know, Glennon's deal was for $15 million this year. That's the bottom of the barrel if you're going to be a starting quarterback, that, you know, that's as low as it's going to be. So if you're a starter, you're getting 20 north generally. And if you're a backup, you're getting, you know, 7 south generally. So nobody signs contracts in that $10 million range. And I wonder, I'm very curious to see what somebody will pay McCarron this year, because I, you know, I'd probably happily pay him 2 years, $16 million. But I don't know that I'm willing to pay, you know, either years or dollars to pay much more than that.
He's intriguing, I'll tell you that. I'm not so sure he's the answer, but he's been intriguing in the snaps that he has played for the Bengals. And if anybody knows,
is Andy Dalton the Bengals? Who are the starting quarterbacks in the AFC North next year?
Ben Flacco, Dalton. I'll say it. McCarron.
Okay, so you know, you got to remember, Saucy's the guy who went after him, and he's gone. So I wonder if Dorsey would have an interest. But do you think Dalton will be the Bengals' starting quarterback?
Yes.
Where are they going to draft? Where are they situated right now? I don't even know what.
If they lose McCarron, they're going to have to draft another quarterback. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, are they drafting around 8 or 9 right now?
I haven't looked.
I can't remember what's their record.
Are they like five and something, right?
5 and 10. That'll put them in the top 10. So you get, you know, yeah, that'll be an interesting decision for them.
They are 6 and 9, right?
No, 6 and 9. Yeah, so
is that right? Yeah, 6 and 9.
Yeah, that puts them around 10. So you get a good player there. Although, you know, what they drafted, who they draft this year with their two first-round picks, they're John Ross and didn't get a lot of production from their Joe Mixon. They had two first-round picks. They didn't get a ton of production from those guys.
Right, right. And look, do we expect them to upset the Ravens this week? No.
That would make their season. It would make the end of, you know, Marvin Lewis's last game as Bengals head coach. You would think, I thought they were going to roll over. I was shocked. I have to say, I was shocked that they beat the Lions. The game mattered to the Lions. It didn't matter to the Bengals. So I give them some credit for that. And you'd know they'd like nothing more than going into Baltimore and knocking them out of the playoffs.
A couple things got to happen for them to get knocked out, though, right?
More than just them losing. They've got to for Baltimore to be knocked out. You got to have Cincinnati's got to win, Tennessee's got to win, and Buffalo's got to win. That'll get them out.
And Buffalo plays, I'm trying to look at it right now, Miami. And San Diego plays the Raiders. So some decent games.
There's also another scenario. Yeah, right. So, okay, here's the most interesting question of the weekend. Tennessee plays – Jacksonville plays Tennessee. And Tennessee kind of needs to win this game they need to win this game to get in. And there is a scenario where Jacksonville can win, and I think there's a scenario where Jacksonville can win. Yeah, there is. And Tennessee can get in. If Miami wins, if Oakland wins, if Baltimore wins, they can still get in. But it's also could be the first round matchup or not the first round matchup. If you're Jacksonville, do you care about this? Do you just mail this game in?
Well, they can't. They cannot increase their they're the number 3 seed.
They're locked in at 3. Yep.
Right. And Kansas City's locked in at 4, right?
Yep.
I mean, there's absolutely no reason to risk hurting anybody.
Right. So you mail it in and just tell everybody else, you know, let the chips fall where they may.
Right, right. I don't think you try to plan on who you're, you know, to manipulate. I mean, you can only control what you can do in your game.
And you don't want to show Tennessee anything, so you're just going to vanilla it because there's a decent chance you're playing them.
You could end up being back-to-back weeks against them. So why show them any? Make them show you all their cards.
Yeah, because if Baltimore wins, I think it's guaranteed. You know, if Baltimore wins, I think they're guaranteed to be the 5 seed. So,
right. Well, they would be 10-6, and what is the Titans would be 9-9 and 7. So, I think some things have to happen for the Ravens to either be out.
Yeah, Ravens win, they're guaranteed fifth seed, and they can still be the fifth seed even if they lose. And they can still be in if they lose. So
they can still be the sixth seed too, right?
Yes, they can be the sixth seed if they lose.
Okay, all right. All right, let's not turn this into Browns Depot or the Browns podcast or whatnot. I'm sure people are ready for us to move in another direction here. We were going to talk about the officiating and all and Al Riveron. What did you think about the Kelvin Benjamin non touchdown in that game against the Patriots?
You know, the best I've seen anybody discussing this is, look, I think if you want to find a way to make that incomplete, there's probably a still that you can make it. You can make a judgment that, you know, because that's all it is a judgment of when he has control and say he doesn't have it till his back foot is up in the air. You can probably make that argument. But clearly, and this is the point, is the people in New York have taken the opportunity to use replay to re-officiate the call, not to determine if the call on the field, you know, to find the word that I never get right, indisputable evidence that the call is wrong. They just throw everything out and they look at the call as if no call was ever made, because it's not indisputable in that case. Now, in the Jesse James case, I personally, and I think you do too, think that you know, that was a reasonable overturn. In the Benjamin case, it's not a reasonable overturn because it's just not indisputable. And it's like, you know, that's my whole point. That's my view on this, is this was not a catch rule issue. This was not, you know, what is a catch, because we know what a catch is. This is somebody determining he didn't have possession when the foot was down. And that's not okay. You know, what's a catch? What isn't a catch? This is a different thing. So, you know, I think they got it wrong, and I think they got it wrong because they're not doing the right thing anymore. They're not doing what their charter says they're supposed to do.
Yeah, I try to blow up those zoom in on those feet of his and then sync it up with because, you know, during that replay, Tony Romo and Nance had him stop the tape right when they thought that Benjamin had possession. They freeze it for like a second and a half, and then, you know, I took all that clip and try to, you know, do what I always try to do, make a Zapruder film out of it.
Right.
I can't do much, Dave, but I can I know how to blog poorly, and I know how to use a video editor. I can do those two things, so at least I have that going for me. You know,
a couple things in. One on the I mentioned a couple podcasts ago when we did the Chris Boswell podcast that, you know, I had a feeling that I had a sense that Heinz Field, its reputation of being difficult to kick in was earned a long time ago, and it was no longer the case. And one of our listeners, Benjamin Ristow, sent Dave and I a bunch of data. He did a great job, and he's going to write up an article in the off season when the season's over to have it be more complete. But basically, he went through every field goal kicked at Heinz Field and looked at different periods of Heinz Field and how it compared to league average. And the reality is, the Heinz Field reputation was earned in the very first couple of years. And I think he postulates correctly that it was probably largely due to field conditions as much as anything, because aside from a couple of outlier seasons, 2001, 2006, 2011, Heinz Field has been extraordinarily similar to league average, and that's including all the domes and warm weather cities and everything else. So, you know, I'll leave it to Dave and Ben to sort it out. He just sent us an email while we're sitting here talking about, you know, putting this up. But he went through all the game books, got the data. So great work on that, Ben. Appreciate it. And I think it does confirm what we're thinking. It doesn't take anything away from the greatness of Chris Boswell, again. But it was some good stuff.
Boy, I bet that guy's good in math.
Yeah, he did. He got all the, you know, he went through, I think he gave us the number of 128 regular season games through 2016. and charted all the data, and he gave us a graph and put some good stuff up. And so when he has some time in the off season, that'll be something interesting, I think, for everybody, for fans too, because again, this is one where, you know, the data is not just readily available, and I think the data does not correspond with what the general perception is.
All right, what have we made? And yeah, thanks, Ben, for that. I glanced over that as well too. I didn't have time to open up the attachment and file and look at that. I will probably next couple of days here. So, you know, well, boy, we got a great resource to pull from. Some people that know how to use some math and all. That's
how about that? I put up some data yesterday on the NFL rushing title. And by the way, as soon as I got off Twitter, the moment, you know, I tweeted once or twice only after. It was announced that Harrison was cited in Boston because I had other things to do yesterday. Let's put it that way. But Dave, the rushing title coming into the last week of the season, it's, you know, as close as we've seen it in a long time with multiple guys. Gurley, 1,305 yards. Kareem Hunt, 1,292. Le'Veon Bell, 1,291. The game, all three teams are playoff bound. The game means nothing to the Chiefs. As you pointed out, they're locked in at the 4 seed. For the Rams, off the top of my head, I think they're locked in at I have it. Let me pull it up here. And obviously for the Steelers, you know, there's a small issue. So what are the chances Le'Veon Bell wins the rushing title?
I think being as how he's going to – we think he's going to play in this game. I think there's a decent chance and probably going to see.
The Rams are going to be the third or fourth seed. So they can be one way or the other. They're obviously going to have a first-round home playoff game. And then they're going to be on the road if they win that game. So they're going to be the third or fourth seed. So I don't know exactly how the Rams will play it. There are a bunch of iterations possible in the NFC as to who's seeded where because of the NFC South being so close.
Let's see. And McCoy is like as far as rushing yards go, he's
130 back, right?
Yeah. You know, it's going to take a big game from him. So I personally, I think it's down to Gurley and Bell, and I guess it all depends on how long Gurley plays because I think we expect Bell to get, you know, what 15 carries maybe for Bell. Does that sound
right?
Yeah,
I would think he's, you know, kind of the numbers that he had against Houston. Would be kind of in line for that. So yeah, I'd say it's a toss up. I don't know if the Chiefs are going to play Hunt at all. I wouldn't if I were them. So I would say it's a toss up between Bell and Gurley. And Gurley has, if you didn't hear the numbers, he has a 14-yard lead coming into the game. Le'Veon Bell's probably going to win the yardage. Antonio Brown's probably going to win the receiving yards title. He's not going to win the catch title. He's already been surpassed, but. I think he's got about a 100-yard lead going into the last week.
1533 for Antonio, and Nuke Hopkins has 1378. So Nuke would have to have a heck of a game. And Julio, too. I mean, Julio's only like 14 yards behind Nuke, I think, as well, too. So it'll be interesting to watch that as well, too. So Mike Thomas said he doesn't care about all that. So, you know,
I believe him.
But we'll see how much Le'Veon ends up playing. Mike Hilton named the defensive player of the week this week. First Steelers defensive back to be named defensive player of the week since Troy Polamalu in 2013. First time I read that, I thought it said first defensive back to be named defensive player of the week. I thought there's no way that can be true. But the first Steelers defensive back to be named defensive player of the week since Troy Polamalu in 2013. Now, well deserved, you know, I think. And Hilton certainly, as we talked the other day, has a great first season and very Chris Oldham-ish, if you will.
Big day as we talked about for Hilton. One other thing on the yardage numbers from scrimmage, and I put up the stats of Gurley and Bell, and we heard the rushing yards. Obviously, Le'Veon Bell has about 40 more carries than Gurley, and the yards are about even. Bell 13, Bell 9 TDs, Gurley 13. This is the one that surprised people and why Gurley's front and center on the MVP conversation. He'd only had 64 catches. In his career, coming in his first 2 years, and he has 64 again this year, and Bell has 85. But Gurley's got 788 yards, and Bell has 655. Gurley also has six TDs receiving. He has 19 TDs on the season. He's right there with, you know, I think people are going to lean toward Brady, but Todd Gurley certainly made a big push the last 2 weeks to be MVP. And then if you look at the numbers for Kamara and Ingram, they just absolutely blow you away, that two-headed monster. They've got 24 TDs between them and 2,900 yards from scrimmage. Bell's got 1,900 and Gurley's got 2,100. So the backs from New Orleans, if they were combined into one, they'd be your MVP.
And boy, you know, you look at the amount of touches Gurley has versus the amount of touch Bell has for Gurley to put up the numbers he's put up is pretty phenomenal. You know, a nice average yards per touch, if you will. So you know, he's fun to watch. There's no doubt about it. He's fun to watch, and he's going to be a reason that the Rams now have a shot, I think, in the NFC now that the Eagles, you know, don't have their quarterback anymore. So definitely going to be fun to watch all the way around with the playoffs, David. So we'll get back after it again on Friday. Hopefully, have the Browns beat writer on to preview that game a little bit more. Look ahead to some of these matchups coming up into the weekend as well, too. Boy, for not having a lot to talk about, you know, I guess we did have a lot to talk about with James Harrison. We filled up an hour here. But in the meantime, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to get in a donation before the end of the year, you can do that. I'm not going to tell you that's tax deductible. Maybe some of you can figure out a way to do that. But if you want to do that, go to SteelersDepot.com, hit that donate button, upper right navigational bar. David, that's all I got until Friday.
As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.